Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of RealCom Live. So good to be with you. I was just coming out of the green room with our guests, and we were having some good laughs. This is going to be a great show, not just because we've got some really smart people, but I've known them for a long time. These are true warriors in the journey to a smarter, better building. I would consider them all friends at this point. And just to kind of give you an idea of the scope of their expertise, I mean, these folks are personally involved with little organizations like Ford, like the Federal Reserve, like GSA, Public Building Services. I mean, you peel back the skin on some of the biggest, largest, most comprehensive smart building projects in this country, if not the world, and a pretty good chance these three gentlemen will have a finger in it or at least know a lot about it. So with that, why don't we bring on our guests, Scott Cochran, President of Cochran Supply, Greg Stevenson, President of Oros Group, and Donnie Walker, partner of Newcomb & Boyd. Guys, so good to see you. How are you?
Hi, Jim.
I'm great. Good to see you, Jim.
Good, Jim. Right.
So are we going to have the real conversation, or are we going to have a polite conversation? That's my first question. That's unfair to the audience. They were not privy to our conversation. You got to understand, when you get a bunch like us together, who've been fighting this battle of smarter buildings, connected buildings, energy-efficient buildings for 20, 25 years, Scott, you and I are probably the elders on the screen. I mean, at some point, it's good to vent a little bit about some of the frustrations of the market. So it's really a joy to have you guys on. So what we're going to do is I want to quickly, we got too many questions for this short amount of time. So I just want to get a brief understanding. We'll start with Scott, then we'll go Craig, and then over to Donnie. Give me an idea of what COVID last 18 months has done to your business, to the industry, to systems integrators who've been working on smart buildings. Just a high level overview.
So from, you know, as Cochran Supply, we're a distributor. We sell a lot of great lines of building automation to a bunch of great integrators. So we see a lot in terms of the different types of projects and what's been happening. And I'd say the major trend we've seen with the integrators during COVID is the shift to, like, from a negotiated standpoint on their work is, integration is red hot right now at the end of the day. So we're seeing where owners are looking at taking their existing platforms and integrating them instead of ripping and replacing at a much larger rate than we saw before COVID. And so we're seeing a lot of those opportunities because of, you know, within this COVID time period. So.
And but bottom line, you guys have been busy.
It's been very busy. Construction didn't stop. Service slowed down when the buildings were empty. But of course, as they're filling up, it's just picked right back up. So all that kind of backfilled. So I don't feel like the industry's missed much during COVID in terms of volume or revenue or anything like that. It's been pretty steady, I would say.
Okay, Craig, how about from your vantage point?
Hi, Jim. It's great to be here. I'm Craig Stevenson with the Oros Group. The Oros Group, we focus on the intersection of building science and data science. So when you ask the question about COVID for us, we believe that this is really an argument. The pandemic is an argument for better buildings, right? Higher quality buildings. When we talk about how do we deal with air quality, you know, we want to keep the outside out and the inside in. You know, envelope first strategies have a multi-purpose effect for, you know, helping reduce energy consumption and also in increasing indoor air quality. And just not just about keeping the outside out, but it's about circulating additional ventilation air inside the space. Well, if we do that in a tight building and we use energy recovery to do that, we don't have to spend a premium in energy cost to do so. We also see this demand that's really kicking up for continuous monitoring for air quality, and that's tied hand in hand with smart building technology, right? If you're going to start talking about deploying sensors and air quality meters all over the place, you need to have the right infrastructure to control that data, bring it in, distribute it so everybody can get it transparently. So for us, it's really been an argument for high performance buildings, and we need to start doing better than code-based construction, which represents the worst buildings we're legally allowed to build.
So basically, you were already on the journey. COVID just accelerated it.
COVID and climate change have really accelerated the arguments for high performance building for sure.
Okay, good. Donnie, how about you? What's life been like the last 18 months?
Yeah, thanks. So Donnie Walker with Newcomb & Boyd, and you know, we are an intelligent building focused design firm, and being design focused, when COVID hit, we saw a brief pause while people collected their thoughts, and then right back at it, you know, even busier than before. And I really think that it can be attributed to the fact that you know, so many people look to technology as the solution. You know, we had to quickly figure out how to blend the digital and the physical, and as you know, that's what we've been doing for years with intelligent buildings. And so, you know, everything from the user experience to how do we operate the buildings without having the operator there? You know, that's an easy thing to solve, and unless you're not ready for it.
Right. So back to Scott. Scott, what are the phone calls you're having today? Meaning the things you're thinking about for the next 12 to 18 months. How's the conversation changed, or hasn't it?
Well, where we're going today is, I kind of, both to what Donnie and Craig said, is the demand of the owners has certainly shifted. And it is much more technology focused today than it was prior to COVID. And so we're being asked for the software that we're supplying to do more than ever. And a lot of it goes into, you know, taking like the building control software, tying it into the enterprise level of the business that's in the building, or trying to truly enhance the occupant experience with the building data. You know, we're seeing those asks coming more and more of the software we're supplying.
Right. Guys, anything you want to add to that?
The only thing I want to add is I want to reinforce what Scott just said, is that, you know, right now we know that buildings use 40% of the energy in the United States that's created, right? We're one of the biggest users of energy and the contributors to climate change. So when you talk about, you know, changing that and making it better, owners are not unwilling to invest in building performance. They just want to know whether or not they got what they paid for, which means that you have to converge building science and data science to answer that question. And once you do so, to Scott's point, you see an acceleration in the investments because they are now incentivized because they know that their investments are paying back. They're not just throwing money into a well.
Okay, so what something Scott just said made me think of a question. It might be a little controversial, but in my inbox, I've got an email from somebody, a CIO was really interested in pursuing, you know, smart buildings, real estate technology, and we're going to schedule a call. He said because the deal guys, won't give him the time of day, and he wants an idea. Couple that with the report that we wrote about a few weeks ago, where energy consumption in New York City in 2020 maintained at the same level, despite the fact that the buildings were 5% occupied. Anybody want to take a run at all this hype, all this conversation, global warming, $3.2 trillion infrastructure bill, and yet, and we've had money to do these things, but yet it still doesn't seem to really get done.
Yeah, I can take a shot at that. The operations contracts are written around building continuity, not around energy savings. And so the buildings have been set up to make sure the systems run. And the easiest way to do that is to keep them always running. And right. So until you shift that philosophy to say saving energy is a part of your job because you're running the building, it's you're not going to see those kind of things. So, you know, when COVID happened and the buildings emptied out, the system still ran just like they always did.
And nobody thought to turn off the lights a little bit?
Well, I think the other issue here, Jim, is unless they had Donnie or Craig design their system, there's a good chance they had no control of their data. Right. I mean, we're still seeing these systems get put in and the owner doesn't think about their data until it's after the system's put in. That's too late. Data needs to be, when you put together a facility, the data that runs the facility needs to be considered up front by the design engineers. If not, you'll never get the data out of the building properly without spending a boatload to do it. So
we've now got a real life case study, 2020, occupancy down, energy the same. That's not good. What do you say to those folks? What should they start doing Monday morning? I mean, what's the, do they call Donnie and Craig, or seriously, what's the Monday morning or Tuesday morning? Because we have a holiday, Tuesday morning action point for those people who, their buildings were designed for one purpose, but now recognize that, oops, we shouldn't be spending the same amount of energy if our buildings are empty.
We got a lot of the calls to look at ventilation because of COVID, and people wanted to know, were they, you know, meeting code requirements for ventilation at least? Can they overventilate to help with that air quality? And, you know, and what we came back to them and said is, while we're there, let's do a retro commissioning opportunity to say, how can your building operate more efficiently? Even if it means adding some equipment to give it the feedback that it needs to be able to operate to occupancy rather than to schedule. It's an easy fix.
So you're saying it's a pretty easy thing to do.
Oh yeah. Sub 1 year payback in almost every case. It just kind of takes the willpower to do it.
Craig, so, Jim, I would add, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I would add to that, that the first thing we do when we're called in on a building is we sit down with our owners and we set our goals. Too many times we see the C-suite setting carbon reduction goals or people in leadership positions setting those goals. And then by the time it gets down to facility management, they don't know the first five steps of what to do. So you have to set goals first, and then you use whole building energy modeling to make sure that you're managing those goals. And then you work with people like Scott and Donnie to create feedback loops to know whether or not you've reached those goals. Your measurement verification systems must be tied to your owner's project requirements. And your owner's project requirements must be empirical based, must be evidence based. You cannot tell me I hung a plaque on the wall and therefore I'm green. That doesn't make sense anymore. Owners are requiring accountability. So when Donnie talks about this, I agree with Donnie. But what Donnie's talking about is buildings use so much energy that there's so much low-hanging fruit. Sure, we can reach up and grab all that low-hanging fruit if we want, but if you want to reach the carbon reduction goals required to meet climate change, you must holistically look at your buildings and set a goal holistically for that building. So incremental versus holistically has been our approach. We advocate for holistically because the investments will pay back immediately. But Donnie's right, there's so much opportunity in these buildings because they use so much wasteful energy that we can go in and make an intervention very, very quickly. But if you really want to meet real goals, set your goals, tie them to the meters and sensors, and then you'll know very quickly whether or not you met those goals.
So Scott, before we take a break, I'm going to last question to you. This is a culture shock or a culture war, culture battle. You got a real estate industry who's used to digging holes, pouring concrete, raising steel, topping out and leasing it up. Okay. And technology has only been in the conversation for a small percentage of the marketplace, pretty much the RealCom, IBCon crowd. How do you tell somebody who's got very little real tangible, deep experience with all the things Donnie and Craig just mentioned? You're in the elevator with a building owner in New York City. You got a minute to get down to the first floor. What do you tell them?
Do you know how to turn anything off in this building? You have a clue? Can you call somebody right now and turn off a floor of lights? Can your building even do that? Do you have any of that data available to you? I mean, if you don't and you got a portfolio of something this big, you're an eco nightmare, man. I mean, Jesus, you're wrecking the universe. Come on, man. I mean, well, this is the beginning is getting the leadership to understand their responsibility of these portfolios and the basic responsibility of control. You know, it's like, would you drive your car if you couldn't open and close the windows? Hell no, you wouldn't, right? You wouldn't. You'd say your car's broken. Well, if you can't control that stuff in your building, isn't your building broken? Shouldn't you focus on getting that stuff under control? Because if you're not, you can't do anything. You know,
so more importantly, would you leave your car on overnight sitting in your driveway?
Exactly. Yeah. Wasting gas. Yeah.
And we throw the auto industry up as like, that's the energy problem. No, they're working on that. We're not working on the buildings like they
yeah,
are.
Yeah, exactly. People think autos are the big
positive. So I'd guilt trip them into getting control of this stuff so they could do something.
Well, you know what's even more frustrating is I was in Tokyo in 04. So that's 17 years ago. And I got a personal tour by the chairman of Matsushita at their corporate headquarters outside of Tokyo. And he gave us, this is 2004. He did the parting of the seas demo. He walked in, we were on like the 10th floor of this building. All the lights were off. He said, watch this. He started walking, the lights went on. And as he walked away, the lights went off, right? And I go, but people like to look at pretty buildings in you know, cities. They make cities look pretty at night. That's why they leave the lights on. And he goes, we figured that out. They had the little LED lights on the outside of the building, illuminating the building while the interior lights were all off. And when you see the solutions and everybody doesn't want to talk about them, that makes it even more frustrating. Yeah. But anyway, so we got a little bit of the gripe session, and that's good. And I guess we have to collectively, and I don't like guilting people. I like to present logic and common sense and business ideas. But at some point, we got to start shaking the stick a little bit and saying, come on, it is really time. If you've got these big goals and objectives for, you know, global warming and sustainability and healthy wellness, you know, healthy buildings, you're not going to accomplish it without these, you three guys. You're just not. You know, technology's got an integral role in this. So, All right, with that, when we come back, we're going to talk about the integrator roundtable and the role these guys are going to play and why it's important for all the systems integrator out there to attend. We'll be right back. All right, now let's get back to our conversation with Scott, Craig, and Donnie. All right, guys, one final thought on our last conversation. You know, we give out the Digi Awards for the last 23 years on the best buildings. Maybe it's time we come up with our own onion and we find the prettiest, dumbest building in the world and give it an award. Meaning it looks nice and, you know, checks all those boxes, but you walk in and it feels like 1978. And believe me, I've been in more than enough of those. All right, so Smart Building Integrator Summit. I think we're on our 8th, 9th year. You guys have all been active, Scott, especially you, since the very beginning. The idea is pretty simple. Pre-conference to RealCom and IBCon, we have a specific meeting for a specific group of people, in this case, systems integrators. I believe this is where the term master systems integrator first came up about 5 or so years ago. It's leading edge visionary integrators who are done just sticking controls in a building and running, who understood the importance of IT networks and the integration and understand IoT. And you guys are three of those on the advisory council. Scott, since you've been at it the longest, you want to give the viewers just a little understanding of what your impression of that integrator roundtable is all about?
Sure. Thanks, Jim. So the integrators, the BAS contractors, they're eclectic group. They're special people. We're not like normal people. We need to be put together in a forum where we can talk about technology and how it goes together, because the BAS industry, if you think about it, is a bunch of different moving parts, and how they come together bodes to the success of it. And for us to succeed as a whole group, we have to share this information with each other. That's the only way we'll make it actually work. And Jim, it's forums like this that, frankly, help us make decisions about how we design projects, how we staff, how we develop our businesses as integrators, right? And so, yep. So it's super valuable, I think, and really, with COVID, it's been missing, and I'm really looking forward to this year to really getting back on the horse and getting that conversation going again.
And so, we recognize this year is going to be smaller than certainly smaller than Nashville in 2019. And then we did our hybrid event on Denver last year. But yeah, this is our first time to really try to get more bodies into the room. And of course, we're going to do it as safely as humanly possible. Again, reaching way out and looking at COVID techs that we've deployed in Denver to see which one of those makes sense. Again, we had systems integrators crawling through air conditioning ducts at the Marriott in Denver, trying to figure out how we could fix COVID, right? So it's you guys, not me, it was your industry that was helping us do that. Donnie, what kind of things have you learned over the years at the Integrator Roundtable, and why would you invite your fellow systems integrator to an event like that?
I think it's one of the only forums where people are getting together to really discuss best practices in smart buildings. And so, not just some of the high level things and running over, but we're really getting into details. And those best practices are needed because, you know, one of the things we talked about is that right now there's more opportunity out there than there are systems integrators to get it done. And so, you know, yeah, having these guys be able to be more nimble, be ready for what the market is bringing as opportunity, and then applying those best practices to really get the jobs done.
And Craig, before I ask you to respond, to pile on with what Donnie just mentioned, I think we were probably one of the first to spend as much time talking about IT as we did OT. And that goes back 8, 10 years, however long this event's been going on. I mean, from day one, Scott remembers, we said you are not going to create a smart building to meet contemporary standards unless you fully understand IT. Craig, that leads right into you with your data perspective. You don't get data unless you're on a what kind of network?
Well, open. But for me, I'm just really excited for this conference because for me, it's about lessons learned. We're curating a couple case studies that are going to be talking about buildings that are going up, new construction in this case, that's going to be reducing energy consumption by 80% using passive house strategies. And it's not just about the building science associated with their envelope first strategies, but how are they tying it back to the technology? And this is where we're working with some really cool teams on these projects that are taking their goals and strategies and tying them through use cases back to the meters and sensors that come from these buildings. And to your point, you know, everybody talks about a standardization. We know how important a standardization is for operational technology networks. Now, depending on what you pick for your standard, you need a standard. There's no difference when you deal with the ESGs and environmental sustainability goals. You need to have a standard, right? Especially in an existing building. How are we going to deal with our envelope optimization per climate zone? You can do that through building science. So it's creating the standard for how we deal with buildings. So when our triggers hit for life cycle and deferred maintenance and natural renovations, we do the right thing. We don't reinforce the building's performance as poor as it is with just, we've done this forever. This is just what we do. And everybody knows when you get into the discussion around ITOT, that's been the inertia that's been really hampering the ability for people like us to turn these buildings all into smart buildings, make them perform much better. It's just, we got to defeat that inertia and the way things have always been done.
Okay. I got 1.5 more questions, and this one's a real quick answer. Okay. Out of 10 projects with 10 different systems integrators, all the people you all know out there, out of 10 projects, how many are going in with the old fashioned, you know, one system, analog system at a time versus an integrated IP-centric modern approach? Out of 10, how many are traditional and how many are moving forward? So Craig, let's start with you.
Well, for me, in our role of owner's performance advocate, which is typically the role we take on these projects, we're all dealing with a converged network basically in everything we do.
So you're dealing with all the people on the new modern front.
Exactly, because we can. It's been our call.
Yeah, and that's probably an unfair question because you guys do hang with the top. And Scott, how about when you are out there in the rest of the world, not in this group moving forward, how many out of 10 are still producing or suggesting the old-fashioned way?
So, Jim, realistically, the BAS manufacturers introduced full IP-based product lines less than, I'll say, 2 years ago. Right. So the first jobs got designed, like, not this summer, but last summer. Those jobs are going in right now. So about, you know, about 50%, 30, 40, 50% of the projects now are coming in where they're looking at, you know, an OT network with IP controllers all converged for BAS, right? This is really the first summer of those projects. And we did see a big swing. We saw a huge swing, like 30, 40%. Now, everything we see in design right now is going over to IP.
Okay.
Everything. All right. Because manufacturers, that's what they push now, is all IP controls. So
it took 10 years. It took 10, maybe even more.
10 plus years. A couple summers, you know, 485 is going to be pneumatics, probably in about 2 summers, frankly, for BAS controllers is my guess. But
Donnie, final thought on market adoption, integrators adoption?
Sure. Yeah, well, building on what Scott just said, because all the controls are going IP, it helps us with that conversation with the building owners to say, your controls in the building are going on a network. Let's make sure it goes on the right network and it's done in a secure manner. And so it helps us, you know, you asked how many, we probably have 8 out of 10 projects that are going on, you know, a true converged OT network that is ready to adopt. The other two wouldn't listen.
Yeah, I think what would be interesting is maybe we have a session, a RealCom Live session with some branch office techs from the old world and maybe have Scott come and ask him some questions. Because I do think we've turned the corner, but I was trying to get an understanding of how much of the market has really made that turn. Before we go, guys, Ian, if you can maybe bring up a list of the topics that we're going to be talking about at this Integrator Roundtable, and we can just comment on them a little bit and then let these guys go. All right, so this year, November 1st, 2 p.m. to 6th, at Weston Kierlin, pre-conference to IBCon, Smart Building Integrator Summit, Evolution of the MSI, Meeting the Needs of Building Owners for Open Data Solutions, Dealing with the Staff and Skills Gap. We didn't even get to that topic today. Tips and Tricks, Data Science. We did touch on data science and building science delivers zero carbon goals. And then, of course, cyber. Guys, any comments on these? Which is, we're going to tweak a little bit and change a little bit, but this is pretty much the foundation for the event.
Well, I'm super excited about, especially the OT conversation, to hear about, you know, about what others are thinking after our first summer of really deploying these OT networks at scale. So I'm super excited to hear about everybody's experiences for sure.
Okay. Guys, any final thoughts?
The only thing I'll share, Jim, on the way out is obviously, you know, everyone can get a flavor for our role in terms of high performance buildings. But it's interesting to me after working with this team, how a high performance building is embedded in each of the four, even staff. I mean, you look at that and you think like, man, high performance is a bolt on, we'll deal with it later. It's embedded in each and every one of those. It's right. Ingrained. So I'm just really excited to learn more about the projects we'll be presenting on.
Donnie, any final thoughts?
Yeah, with the cyber first that we talked about, you know, if our buildings are going in with all of these controls on the network and we're building out these networks that really run everything in the building, we better secure it from the start. You know, we can't put it all together and try to secure it later. It's got to go secure as it's going in because, you know, the criticality for being secure has never been greater.
Never been greater. Yeah. Well, guys, a couple various levels of thank you. Thank you for your time today. Great, great, great conversation. We're going to have you back and get even more controversial now that you're comfortable with this format. Two, thank you for your commitment and the help putting together the Integrator Roundtable. But third, and probably the most important, thank you for the 10, 15, 20, 25 years that you have all put into, you know, pushing the elephant up the hill to make this 100-year-old industry to get it prepared for the 21st century. It has not been an easy journey, but it's been a pleasure and a joy working with guys like you. I just want to say thank you.
Thanks. Same to you, Jim.
Thank you.
Okay, we will be in touch. Be well.
Thanks.
All right. You can tell that was a very easy, comfortable conversation with some great people and just really excited and proud to be working with them on the Integrator Roundtable. So with that, let's bring in Howard Berger and one of my favorite parts of our weekly episode, the news. There you are, Howard, if you want to share with people the crazy stuff going on out there in the industry.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Thanks, Jim. And thank you, Scott, Donnie, and Craig. Great having you guys with us. This is an exceptional show. So I'm here right now with some news stories from our weekly news briefing that we release every Thursday, 11 a.m. Pacific. So the lead article this week on Florida's first smart district, Water Street, Tampa. And the developer is Strategic Property Partners, SPP. They've given Tampa a leg up with this mixed-use 56-acre waterfront development. About 9 million square feet, new commercial, residential, educational, entertainment, cultural, and retail space, with a total investment exceeding $3.5 billion. Now, technology was foundational to the vision for Water Street. SPP's tech advisor was Whitespace, and they were the digital master planner that really helped define the strategy and ensure that that vision was ultimately delivered and spec'd. Now, some of the initiatives include district cooling for cold water and air conditioning to the entire neighborhood, DAS small cell coverage, publicly accessible 5G Wi-Fi, and a mobile platform for doing everything from reservations to parking to personal services. Smart light poles, 5G antennas, cameras, communication with emergency management portals for tenant, resident, and guest notification, smart parking with real-time data analytics, over 100 EV charging stations, more to come. Big, big focus on cyber and data privacy, and the entire neighborhood is well pre-certified. So great, great project. Way to go, SPP and Whitespace. So read about that one. Next, a quick shout out to our tech partner, iOffice. And their article highlights five new commercial and corporate real estate investment opportunities. Here's a real quick rundown. So first, 59 million Americans now freelancing, so co-working tops the list is number one. Number two, huge increase in U.S. commerce with online shopping hitting new highs, so it's fulfillment and distribution centers to take the number two spot. Now, third, micro units under 500 square feet have been traditionally in high-density metropolitan areas, but now we're spreading out to suburban areas on both resi and office, making micro units number three on the list. Number four is adaptive reuse. I mean, think converting a hotel into affordable multifamily or even turning a retail box into fulfillment and distribution center. And finally, the article suggests not just focusing on bricks and mortar, but also on hardware and software to run them. So from sensors that measure air quality to lease pipeline software, it helps owners convert more lease prospects to tenants. For the informed speculative investor, maybe looking at those prop tech opportunities might be interesting and profitable. So thanks, iOffice. And then quickly, finally, the Hickman. It's a 75,000 square foot tech enabled office in Whitechapel, London, developed by Great Portland Estates in September 2020. And it's become the first building in the world to achieve a platinum rating from SmartScore, the new certification scheme for smart buildings. That was launched by Wired Score back in April 2021. Now, part of the tech strategy included creation of a BIM model for construction management, but that morphed into a digital twin for ongoing building operations, bringing in the data from the BMS sensors, air quality, lighting, and energy consumption into a single pane of glass. So applying machine learning is next on the drawing board. That sounds like an interesting project. Unfortunately, I know I've gone over time on this. So that's it for me today, but there's a lot more in our weekly briefing. So check it out, and I will see you all next week. Oh, and have a happy Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, actually great to let everybody know and relax a little bit. We got a 3 in some cases 4 day weekend coming out here. So, you know, it's really interesting, Howard, from, you know, thinking back years and years ago, we used to have to scan the globe to find a good smart building project every 6 months, every year. It is amazing as I watch you do the news now more and more every week. We're finding the projects. We're not talking about ethereal, you know, philosophical or hypothetical things. We're seeing real buildings, real projects, and that's encouraging.
Both new builds and retrofits, which makes it kind of interesting too. So
that makes it very interesting.
The stories are developing, and it's good to be able to report on these.
Cool. Well, thank you again. Great job. And with that, I'm going to close out the show. But before we do that, we're going to hear from our final sponsor, and I'm going to give you a little bit of idea what we're going to talk about next week. To do a special shout out to Ian. Ian's one of our team members, and I believe it was his fingers on the keyboard today that produced this show. So, Ian, if that was you behind the scenes, great job for your first time. Went really smooth, and I want to say thank you for all the time and effort and the prep it took to make this transition to helping out and being able to produce. So, all right, with that, I would like to introduce next week's show. It's going to be with Robert Enton from Vernado and Elon Zakhar from Car Properties. These are two of our chairman from the RealCom conference, the real estate enterprise, real estate technology side of the event. Robert has been in our community, gosh, 15 plus years. Nobody better than Robert. Elon Zakhar, Elon's probably in the 7 to 8 years been in the community, but doing some insane things, not just in the smart buildings realm, but in the back office, real estate technology. These are two leaders that you are definitely going to want to hear from. And just like today, we're going to talk about a little state of the industry, and then we're going to talk specifically about some of the topics we're going to be talking about at the conference. You don't want to miss it. These are two leading real estate CIOs who are at the top of their game, and really we consider industry leaders, and I think you will as well. So with that, you have a great Labor Day weekend. If you're here in the United States, if you're watching around the world, enjoy your weekend as well, and we will see you next Friday on RealCom Live. Be well.